Welcome back to What It's Really Like to Be an Entrepreneur. I'm Vincent A. Lancey.
I'm Bill Sanders.
Whether you're already an entrepreneur, are looking to start your journey tomorrow, or are just someone who needs a little extra motivation to get through the day, this is the perfect podcast for you. Each week, I interview a different entrepreneur from across the globe. I will continue to offer episodes in all industries to provide you with many different perspectives. You never know which motivational journey will inspire you most. Each guest will take you through their story and help you learn from their successes and lessons learned. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate the show 5 stars and continue listening by subscribing. My guest on the show today is someone I met when searching to network with fellow University of Tampa alum. After 13 years with Wells Fargo, including the role of Senior Vice President of Investments, he took the leap to run his own endeavors. A few months after leaving corporate, he founded Pomacea Wealth Management. He acts as president for this boutique firm that specializes in personalized portfolio management, wealth preservation, and legacy planning. In addition to working with individual clients, they have built a culture that invites strategic partnerships with financial institutions, law firms, accounting firms, and real estate agencies to provide financial planning and investment consulting alliances. 3 years later, he also founded Divorce Financial Management, acting as CEO. Divorce Financial Management offers a comprehensive approach to the burning question of divorce for couples and or individuals and allows you to realize the value of working with a CDFA to procure a smooth divorce and stable financial future. The level of today's guest's hard work and persistence over his career is sure to inspire you and propel you into greatness. Allow me to now please introduce Bill Sanders. Bill, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Vincent, for having me. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Would you mind please introducing yourself to our listeners a little further and previewing your story without giving away too much of your entrepreneurial journey?
Sure. You know, you mentioned as part of my bio that as in more recent years, I became an entrepreneur because I was part of the corporate world for the majority of my career. To give the listeners some more insight as to my career, I actually started with Dean Witter back in 1983 at the age of 25. I'm turning 62 this month. So that gives you a little more perspective and insight into how long this journey has been in respect to my career as an investment advisor and later becoming an entrepreneur. Most of my clients today don't know that I had only an associate's degree when I was hired at Dean Witter back in 83 and actually became a CFP before I finished my degree at University of Tampa. I didn't finish my degree. I became a CFP in 1989 and I finished my degree at University of Tampa in 1993.
So I'm excited for this.
By the way, that was a great experience. Still love the university, part of the board of fellows, and try to stay involved. And, the leadership there is phenomenal.
Absolutely. Have you had a chance to visit and see the new entrepreneurship center they have built?
No, I need to. I need to. You know, COVID's kind of put a hamper on a lot of that kind of stuff. But and we actually had, the board of fellows had a Zoom, kind of a welcome to the new season, starting a new year. And it was a lot of fun though. They had the whole group thing down to a science. They had us in a group and then the moderators kept rotating. So like we had 6 people that kind of stayed together throughout like 6 different rooms. I told you it was the most fun I've ever been on Zoom.
So. Yeah, I'm definitely thinking about getting involved, but I think this is a perfect time to get into the big five, Bill. On each episode, my guest and I go over these 5 questions to help you, the listeners, learn what it's really like to be an entrepreneur. Are you ready to go?
Absolutely.
Great. So when did you realize you either weren't happy with what you were doing or you just needed some kind of change to truly start this entrepreneurial journey? Please share your story.
Well, you know, I really was at a point in my career, I had the core of my client base had been with me for quite some time. Certainly I was bringing in new business, but the heartbeat of what my business evolved around I felt like it was more of the relationship with those families and those individuals that I didn't have to be tethered to a mothership, one of the big names on Wall Street. And that if I considered independence and more the entrepreneurial avenue, that those clients would follow me. And I was exactly right. And so obviously the what's called an RIA, I'm a registered investment advisor, that sector of the financial services industry is exploding. And so it really was a great decision for me.
Yeah, you definitely found that confidence and took the leap on your own. I'd love to go back a second and talk about how you became actually licensed before you received your diploma. Walk us through that time period for these young entrepreneurs listening on.
Well, the rest of that back story is the fact my dad was in the business. I had the benefit of a father that was had been with Dean Witter for quite some time, and 7 or 8 years. And I didn't, you know, one of the prerequisites even back then was, you know, you needed to have a 4-year degree. And so I had, as again, I had gone to actually HCC, Hillsborough Community College. And I crammed that 2-year degree into 3 years and working part time and, you know, wrapped that up. But I ended up getting married and I went in the insurance business. Believe it or not, I'm married to the same woman since 1980. So
congratulations.
Got it. Thank you. I got in the insurance. I got actually licensed as a college agent going to USF. I went temporarily to USF and it was just too much. You know, it was a commission only position with Northwestern Mutual, couldn't handle it. So I ended up getting on with a protective life and I had a salary of a whopping $900 a month for my wife and I as we were getting married. And so I worked in that industry for about 4 years and my father kept nudging me and saying, you know, son, I'm 62 years old. I want to retire at 65. The insurance business is becoming much like the wealth management business investments. And I really think you need to, you know, consider coming into my business. And so that's when he kind of leaned on his regional manager and said, my son's shown success in the insurance business. It was kind of the school of hard knocks. You know, you take 100 no's a day. And it, I think fundamentally it built a really good foundation for me. And then two, I had my 2-year degree. And so they made an exception with my father's influence. And, you know, the good news is I didn't let my dad down. You know, a lot of people are riding. And that's part of the reason I pushed back for so long was that I didn't want to ride my dad's shirt tail. Mm-hmm. But I guess I'd like to tell the listeners today that, you know, if you've shown some success and you're not just sitting back with your arms crossed with an entitlement attitude, then don't ignore the resources you have within your own family. Nobody's going to look down on you 10 years from now when you've tapped those resources, but you've helped them flourish. And I mean, even in the last couple of days, Vincent, I've thought about my dad and I've said, it's too bad he's not still alive because I know he would be happy and proud of, you know, the success that we've been able to achieve with the foundation that he set.
I couldn't agree with you more there. People that are placed in good situations, there's no need not to capitalize on that good situation, but use it as fuel, as work ethic, like you did to drive yourself further and further and make them proud. And I thought it was also funny to note where I started too at Northwestern Mutual. we haven't caught up too much prior to this, but we spoke a few times. My background is in finance. I started out Northwestern Mutual, my first internship over here on West Shore in Tampa. Did Merrill Lynch over in Clearwater for my second internship. And then started out at PwC over there on MLK as a seasonal assurance process specialist. Those are my first big roles.
Oh, wow. No, you got the relationship piece you probably learned really well there. And that's kind of furthered your own career now, probably.
Absolutely. There's bits and takeaways, golden nuggets from every position, even though I knew kind of in the beginning it wouldn't be the career for me. The skills that I picked up along the way are certainly applicable to what I'm doing now. But you've been on this entrepreneurial path now. You've experienced a lot. What would you say one or two of the most difficult parts of being an entrepreneur are for you, Bill?
I think you already know from what, you know, interaction we've had. The biggest challenge with me is the camaraderie of an office setting. You know, grab your buddy or friend, whatever, you know, and just say, hey, let's go grab some lunch. Or, I mean, we used to have a friend that we'd have a stressful afternoon in the market, and him and I would walk the blocks of Hyde Park together and talk, you know, and just, you know, stress relief. So that's one of those areas that you miss out on as an independent. And so yep. What I've tried to do is I've joined some associations. There's a faith-based group called Kingdom Advisor. We have monthly meetings, and they're all independent advisors. And then there's other associations that I'm a part of where we can interact and share ideas. I have four or five different independent advisors that I'll just connect with once a month, you know, and even Zooming with now, since we haven't been, you know, getting together for lunch or whatever. So right. You have to build your alliance and your interaction with others in a different format. But I do miss that office setting, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, when you get to have lunch with a buddy or take your mind off some difficult or challenging work, some adversity in the workplace. But one of the things that this platform I've created does the benefit of is creating that alliance where I have like-minded individuals that I interview for shows just like this, and it kind of does serve a similar purpose. But I definitely agree with that first one. What would a second one be for you, Bill?
Well, I'm more of a creative thinker to the extent that, you know, my wife is very organized and OCD to the extent, you know, the old joke about, you know, got up to go to the bathroom one night, came back and the bed was made, you know, so it's like, no, she's a sweetheart and she keeps me in line. But the reality is that that's a challenge for me. You know, I'm kind of all over the place, a little ADD instead of OCD, you know, and you can understand that from the, you know, philosophy or mental health section of different personalities and all. So that's a challenge to me to stay organized and be able to run the practice, because there's a lot of different facets of that. And so, you know, I'm constantly having to refocus, and I'm a list person. Mm. And I like to go through the list and highlight and feel like I've accomplished something. So I guess that's been a difficult part, is just keeping all the balls in the air and making sure you don't forget to follow up with somebody. And now actually my wife is helping with paying some of the bills and running the booking as a bookkeeper. I brought her in to kind of help with bookkeeping and keeping my QuickBooks up to date, because I'd get close to, you know, tax time and I got 300 things that still need to be coded, you know? So she's helping me in that department. So
it came up on a couple, maybe last season, where people don't think about the administrative side of being an entrepreneur. They think, oh, entrepreneur, live these lavish lifestyles, you're working for yourself, this and that. But from the annual reports to, like you're saying, tax time, there is a ton to do, and not staying organized makes it that much more difficult.
Absolutely. Now, you don't have in your questions, but I'll go ahead and throw it in. I mean, with that comes some of the great positives that I've experienced. And, you know, it can be sometimes it can be your worst, challenge, or your biggest challenge. It could be also provide some of your best benefits. And that is, I don't have a boss that's going to walk in one day and go, hey, you know what? I just don't like the way things have been going lately, you know, see the door, hit the door. You know, those are the kind of things that, you know, my business has been squeaky clean for 40 years. I'm almost 40 years. I mean, I literally, you know, have been blessed with a clean record, but I still had that little paranoia inside of me. It's like, wait, what, did I miss something? Or this guy, you know, got it wrong. You know, he's not happy with the way I'm doing things or whatever. So that's a real nice benefit to be your own boss. And that I want to communicate to the listeners that there's, you can't put a price tag on that. The peace of mind of knowing that I'm in control, and that, yes, I do have a lot of hats to wear and cover, you know, everything from A to Z in respect to managing the practice. But it's a really great feeling to know that you are in control of your destiny in that respect.
Absolutely. And with being an entrepreneur, there is a lot of learning. You're really trying, tweaking it a little bit, doing it again, because there's no one to tell you how to do it. You're doing it on your own. But from your experiences, Bill, what is one of your greatest failures or lessons learned? And what did it teach you? Why has it still stuck with you all the way up until today?
Well, I think that probably from a failure standpoint, you know, managing people's money, managing expectations. I mean, first off, you got to manage people's expectations. I think in any business that you're in, communicate well with the client and manage their expectations. And then as far as managing portfolios and managing the practice in that respect, I feel like making sure that you have a discipline in place can help guide that. And that certainly I fall victim of not sticking to the discipline. You know, there's certain disciplines you have to have in place. And I've lived by a rule that we're going to talk a little bit more about here in a minute in respect to, probably my number one entrepreneur. But in light of that, a discipline of, keeping your priorities in place. I got into a really tough time back in 2002. I know you remember 9/11, 2001. The market went in the toilet, and I was a transactional broker back then, where if I wasn't trading, I wasn't making money. You know, and so the old school, my dad was a stock jock, we had a goal to meet certain commission dollars each day, and you had to be pitching ideas, and it was basically everybody was like a deer in the headlights. Nobody wanted to do anything, Vincent. I mean, it was just like, and my business crashed. I mean, I came off of 2000, with the tech bubble. I had a phenomenal year in 2000, made the most money I'd ever made in my life. And then boom, boom, boom. And then 9/11 hits. And then from there, so I had to hire a coach, a business coach. I mean, literally it was like, I didn't have any other career. You know, I sure didn't want to go back selling insurance full time, life insurance. But I didn't have anywhere to turn. And I said, I gotta reach down, pick myself back up by my bootstraps. And I hired a business coach. He taught me to basically focus on the things I could control, generating commission back those days. I don't generate commissions, but back in those days, I was so focused on the failure of each day that, from my dad, telling me, we're going to have a goal of $100 a day or $1,000 a day, whatever it was. It's like, I wasn't hitting that goal. So he set lifestyle parameters in this coaching and also daily activities that we had control over. There's so many things that we don't have control over, but set the things that you can control, like how many calls you make, how many contacts you make, how many clients you talk to. And so there were certain things. And then he started with spiritual, family, physical, and then business. So it was like he combined the two, like, why don't you take a walk? Once a day with your wife, you get a chance to talk to her when there's no noise, whatever, and so set the foundational. And I, from a psychological standpoint, you can hear, I mean, like, I wouldn't say that I was in, I never got to the point of fully being in depression and having to take medicine or full medical attention, but I was doggone near close, in respect to what I was going through. It was a very difficult time for financial advisors. And that the industry probably dropped by 25-30%, same with, but it helped me approach 2007 and 2008 and the financial crisis totally different.
I was going to say, yeah, you definitely had some pre-experience to that.
Yeah, we've had our ups and downs in this business for sure.
Bill, well, you stayed focused and you persisted, which I think is a good lesson through all of this, where you're talking about controlling the things you can. And that's obviously very important, because everybody is guilty of stressing on things they have no control over. So that's a great piece of advice. You're tying in a lot of things that is now in the mental health world. And my two worlds obviously are the mental health world and the entrepreneurship, where if you really don't have the mental health world in line, the entrepreneurship world is irrelevant because your productivity is down, your efficiency down, and then overall your health is going to be down. If your mindset isn't in a good place, you're not going to be performing up to your potential or making the most sound decisions.
Yep. No, but I agree totally.
Yeah. You did bring up before the favorite entrepreneur. You're excited for this question, so I'm excited to ask it. You could choose to have a conversation and learn from any entrepreneur, dead or alive. Who are we going with?
Truett Cathy, founder of Chick-fil-A.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, no, he died in 2014 at the age of 93. But, you know, Cathy was an author of 6 different books, a dedicated philanthropist, dedicated to making difference in the lives of youth, which I mentor young people. Haven't written any books yet, but he was a recipient of countless awards over the years, you know, from his business to things that he did in charity work. You know, he was married to the same woman for 65 years and was highly recognized, you know, for leading a life that was centered on biblical principles and family. So Truett always maintained he was not in the chicken business. He was in the people business. And I hope I alluded to that earlier. It's a relationship people business that I'm in. And I'm not in the investment business, but I'm in the relationship business. And I find it interesting that I meet with clients and, you know, one thing that I've always said, and you may be able to relate to this from your background in investments and whatnot, is that, you know, if you live by performance, you will die by performance. In other words, if that's the main focus of your meetings, every time you sit down with a client, you're not going to be the number one performing advisor. And, you know, even if you're using outside managers and allocations and however you go, as far as tactical or strategic, you're not going to always be the first out there. So if you're connected, you're invested in these clients' lives and the relationship that stands, the odds are that, you know, they want to stick with you, the advisor, and the direction and guidance. And they can look into your eyes and know that you're giving them the best advice you can possibly give based on the factors you have at hand. And I'm not always going to be right. You know, I tell people that and I try to be transparent.
Yeah, well, it's people. Everything's a people business. People don't buy from stores or people don't buy from corporations or restaurants. They buy from people. Actually, the gentleman who's on the show airing right now, Ricky Carruth, he is in Alabama. I believe he trademarked it, or he says it, people over transactions. That's his motto. And once he started embodying those thoughts, he sold over 100 homes in Alabama and the real estate markets every year since 2014. Now I had him on the show as an entrepreneur because he has a coaching business to help up and coming guys learn from his story, which you're definitely going to inspire people very similarly throughout your show. So it's a great time to look in the future here with you, Bill. Here we are recording September 2020. We're going to look in 1 year and 5 years out. We're in 1 year out now. Where do you see yourself in all of your entrepreneurial endeavors? Paint the picture.
This year that we're facing now is going to be a transition year. I have actually been looking and praying for an understudy to come into my practice. And on October 1st, just a few weeks away, I've got a partner coming in, a junior partner that we've talked about. Nothing set in stone from the standpoint of once the initial purchase in, but we've talked about a schedule of buy-in over the next 3 to 4 years to where he could get up to being a level 50-50 owner. As I described to my CPA this morning, he's actually moving out of Tampa to North Carolina, or no, Georgia. He's moving to Georgia. And he told me, he goes, Bill, I've only met with one client face-to-face in the last year. He goes, you know, it's been, you know, all through Zoom. And I had one client come to his house. And so what I see is trying to capitalize on, I mean, literally I've had a 99-year-old client on Zoom with me here. Okay. So listeners, please understand that this is changing business forever. Okay. So what I see happening is bringing in a junior partner, transitioning in the book business. I just got off a call with a new resource as far as a more innovative resource that the junior partner, his name is John, partner's name is John, and John's introduced me to some new technology, kind of teach the old dog new tricks and additional revenue streams and financial planning. I never had a way to help someone other than just being a nice guy, say, listen, let me, you know, help you get started and set you up with a few ideas and this sort of thing. But this is an ongoing subscription approach that everything's going to subscription. That allows financial planning input, basically have a CFO on call. And it's a really slick idea. The financial services industry is going in this direction. It can incorporate younger investors and get them on board. And then you build that relationship I was talking about earlier. So there's a way to get them in the door now. For so many years, it's like once they had the money, it was either their college friend or somebody they've been working with for many years, and you miss out on that opportunity. That relationship's already in place. So I'm excited about that. That's kind of the 1 year, and I think I built in the 5-year plan there in respect to where, I mean, I want to spend time traveling and enjoying the fruits of the labor. And so, as we alluded to earlier, got so many things I'm trying to manage. Finally incorporated bringing somebody in to help. And then, I mean, I'd like in the 5 years, I'd like to have five associates and, continuing to grow the practice. I'm not slowing down. And I feel like I'm a pretty youthful 62-year-old and like what the future holds.
Absolutely. I could agree with you there. And you're continuing to grow and grow. And you've walked us through such an inspiring entrepreneurial journey that started right with the Northwestern Mutual and the life insurance and evolved. And you talked about how even though the odds were against you without having the degree in place, you worked that much harder just to get it done. And I think this is a great time to head into the spotlight story. On each episode, Bill, I share an entrepreneurial journey to our listeners, and I would love your take on it. As I have a financial entrepreneur on the show today, I will now introduce the entrepreneurial journey of Brandon Craig, the CEO and co-founder of that app many of you have on your phone, Instash. A quick write-up on him. He was born in New York City, but his parents had financial struggles while a teenager, and he moved to Florida. Being fascinated by Wall Street, he moved back to New York to get involved in the financial services sector. After making the move, he ran into two others who had just started a new company, Edge Trade, and they made him partner pretty soon. The business grew so large that it was acquired in 2007 for $60 million. It grew so big that Knight was actually credited with trading over a quarter of the U.S. stock market on a daily basis. Fast forward to Stash, when it came time to get serious, Brandon and his co-founder both quit their jobs, believed in themselves, and pooled their money together with family and friends. They realized that one of the big hurdles was to educate customers. So Stash began hiring teachers and building a financial education platform. They removed the perceived barriers of investing by eliminating the minimum investment amount, which is now at just one penny to start investing. But even during COVID-19, I learned they were still able to raise more capital to grow and have now raised over $300 million from their most recent Series F fundraising round. Bill, what do you take away from this story?
I wish I had him working with me. That's for sure. He's killing it. What a success story. That's phenomenal. But, I think, he took a little bit different mindset than Wall Street normally takes is, yeah. I mean, again, I'm not slamming Merrill by stating, but I mean, I've heard that they won't take some clients unless they have like $1 million. They set those kind of parameters. I was brought into the business. My father had a mindset that, he never turned anybody away, wanted to try to help him. If he couldn't make money off of him, he felt like, throw a little bread out on the water, it'll come back to you tenfold. So that was the mindset that I was brought into the business with. And so it impressed me that this young man took that approach to business and it's come back tenfold, 100-fold, 1,000-fold. He's done very well with that approach. And I think that's great.
I love that mentality. I'm all about giving back. I love to help people. So I love that mentality because I truly believe it does come around. But Bill, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I know our listeners are going to see all the value in the show. I personally loved how you talked about controlling the things that you can control and not the things that you can't, making those cold calls, doing the things that no one wants to do because it pays a dividend at the end. I loved your choice for entrepreneur, for your story because of what he stands for. Everything with you alluded to treating people correctly. And that goes for every business where that should be the foundation. But it is time for the last word. And I do this on my other podcast series too, A Mental Health Break with Vincent A. Lancey, because I want my listeners to really get to know the guests I bring on. Is there something you would like to share with everybody listening that we did not touch on yet today, Bill?
You know, as a final thought, I've heard it said that, you know, nobody on their deathbed ever looks into the eyes of their family or friends and says, I wish I'd had more time at the office. So, you know, the encouragement that I would have to the listeners is to try to keep, you know, and it's a real buzzword, but it's reality, work-life balance. My encouragement is that don't get so caught up in the almighty dollar and the drive of success by the world's terms of success, because I don't think your bank account has to have a ton of zeros to it. If you're happy, you know, people are seeking happiness in a lot of different ways. And the reality is that, you know, living modestly, being happy in a relationship, the happiness now that I'm experiencing through grandchildren, my gosh, okay, we don't even have enough time for that. Please, you know, keep your perspective in the right order and make sure that you don't, you know, consume your life by that work. And keep your health in good order, your eating and your mental health. Obviously, you can help them with that, Vincent.
Bill, it's a great last word. Would you mind now please sharing your professional social media, your website, any ways for our listeners to follow your endeavors or request your services?
Absolutely. My company website is PalmaciaWealth.com, and that's PalmaciaWealth.com. And probably my most followed Instagram is WSandersCFP. If somebody Googles WSandersCFP, you'll find really all of my social media stuff will come up, because I've tried to code my Twitter and everything with that as my kind of handle, as you'd say. And so, as you know, kind of as a stress release, I like photography and sunsets and sunrise. My daughter says, you know, Dad, you gotta get past the sunset stuff. And I go, I'm the one that has almost 25,000 followers, and so don't even worry about it, right? So
yeah, when I saw that, I was like, wow. I mean, that's tough.
Well, it helps when Paul Delgado, you know, mentions you on the weather every now and then too, and shows your pictures there. So. Either way, hey, it's been a pleasure, Vincent.
Yeah, appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Everybody listening on, be sure to check out that great social media content and website. And it is social media time for the show, and we're on whichever platform you like to use. We're at What It's Really Like to Be an Entrepreneur on LinkedIn, at Your Favorite Morning Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, and It's Podcasts by Lancey on Twitter. So you have updates from this show and A Mental Health Break with Vincent A. Lancey. Of course, my handles are at Vincent A. Lancey on all social media and YouTube, and my website is VincentALancey.com. If you check out my books, DM me. I would love to hear from you all. We have Mr. Lancey Talks Mental Health, Left for Dead, A Story of Redemption, and How to Transform Your Mindset When the Norm is Changed. All are on my website now, which is VincentALancey.com. And as always, I will end the show with a quote that inspired me and know it will for you too. This one is from Brandon Craig, the CEO and co-founder of Stash and entrepreneur from today's Spotlight story. He said, transparency is key. Whether in an established corporation or growing a startup, the only way to maintain trust with your employees is through complete honesty, clear communication, and a transparent, spelled out roadmap. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you all on the next episode of What It's Really Like to Be an Entrepreneur.